realfaith.org.au.
My memory of the day we were told, I was sitting on his bed and the doctor stood there and he told us what it was and he told us there was no cure. And I think Peter and I both at that point realised that his life was limited. And I believe that we both accepted that right at that point.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
What would you do if your spouse of over 40 years was diagnosed with a terminal illness and your time together was limited? What would be the best way to spend your remaining time together? Well, unfortunately, that was the case for our guest today, Margaret Penford. And today we'll find out her and her husband Peter's story and what we can learn from their experiences. Margaret Penford, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric.
And also joining us today to shed some light on this topic is counselor Zoe Broomhead. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you with us. And Zoe, as a counselor, you certainly have had to talk to people about this topic. Is that right?
Absolutely. Both in my professional work and in my personal life, I've sat with people as they work through this process any number of times.
And unfortunately, as we're getting older, the number of people that we know who have a spouse who is dying or has a terminal illness is increasing. It's just a
certainly
part of life.
Certainly. Yeah, we're seeing it just because of stages of life.
Mm-hmm. And I should say that Peter Penford had a big impact on my life and the life of my family, because when we came to Australia in 2003, Peter was the studio manager here at the studios of Reach Beyond on the east side of Melbourne. And he kind of welcomed us, and well, I used his lawnmower and all this kind of stuff. He helped us out, went to see the sights here in Melbourne. So Margaret, yeah, Peter was a big help in helping us get settled here in Australia. And you were there too.
Yes.
I think you came on some of the picnics as well.
We did. I remember hunting for kangaroos.
Yeah, at the Sugarloaf Park and all that. And so let's, before we talk about the remaining time that you and Peter had together after he was diagnosed, let's talk about the Peter and Margaret story. How did you meet? And well, where is Peter from?
Well, Peter's from England. He came over here as a teenager and he decided he was Australian as soon as he arrived.
But he still had a touch of an accent.
Oh, yes, he did. Yeah. Yeah. And I was born very locally in Dandenong, which isn't that far away. Mm-hmm. But we met at a church youth camp, and there was two girls that Peter had his eye on. But because he was a short person, he chose me over the other girl, decided she was too tall.
Well,
so that's how we met.
Okay, and then life together, how many children do you have?
We have a boy and a girl, and they're now both married, and my daughter has two daughters, and our son has two sons. And, yeah, we had a fairly average, normal life living in the suburbs. Peter worked for Telstra for 37 years. He was always a very down-to-earth, stable, reliable guy. If I summed him up in one word, I'd say he was reliable. He thought that was very boring. But that was, I really valued the fact that I could rely on him. He was, yeah, faithful and trustworthy and all through life. But he got to the point in his late 50s where, I won't go into all the details, but he believed that God was calling him to leave Telstra and to come and work at Reach Beyond full time, which was
in ministry,
which was a position where we had to provide our own support. So that was quite challenging for him to leave his security
out, and faith,
because security was a big thing for him.
Yeah,
he was that kind of guy. So he had about 12 years, I think it was, as the studio manager for Reach Beyond in Melbourne here.
And meanwhile, you were working in Christian bookstores?
I was working part-time. I actually worked for the Bible Society, managing a bookstore for them. Yeah.
So both people of faith?
Yes. Yes. Very much from our childhoods.
So very dedicated, strong in your faith.
No.
Okay, well,
I think we had all
straight.
No, I think we had all the usual ups and downs, and I've certainly had times in my life where I've felt you know, a little bit remote from the Lord and struggled through various times in my life. I had a lot of depression when my children were little, and again, Peter was that faithful, solid rock there with me all the way through.
Well, I guess what I was trying to get at, both of you decided in different ways to serve the Lord through your occupations.
Yes, certainly later in life, yes.
So the picture of Peter that we're getting here is he's a very reliable person. He was kind of your rock in your relationship and in your family.
Yes.
But then he started to have some troubles.
In early 2014, he started noticing once on a walk and once on a bike ride that he became very breathless. And he went to the doctor, and the doctor didn't take a lot of notice. And, you know, friends and everyone just were saying, well, you're getting older, mate, and didn't take it that seriously. But then he started to lose weight, and he went through lots and lots of tests and couldn't really find anything particularly wrong. And we had been planning a 3-month camping trip to Western Australia, because camping and getting out in the bush is one of our great loves. Mm-hmm. So we decided to go ahead with that anyway. And it's in the middle of that trip that I had a very interesting experience one day. I'm not the kind of person who has visions or dramatic spiritual experiences, but one day I was reading a devotional book about grief, and I felt very clearly God was saying to me that Peter was going to die. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I had a weird sense of peace, because I felt God was saying, you will be all right. I will be with you. I will never leave you. You will be okay. And, of course, I didn't tell Peter that.
But you even wrote this down in your journal.
I did. I wrote it down in my journal at the time.
Mm. Now, do you think the fact that he was having some of these symptoms played a part in that?
Yes, I think it did. I think subconsciously we were both beginning to feel that there was something wrong.
And he was about 68 at that time?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
All right. So that kind of began the journey of realizing there was something not quite right health-wise with Peter.
Yes. When we came home from that trip and he realized that he'd lost more weight, and he went back to the doctor, more tests, and then at about the Christmas time, he started to notice other things, like he wasn't eating, he wasn't sleeping, he was actually having difficulty even walking any distance. He was working 3 days a week at that time. He was hoping to sort of transition into retirement. Mm-hmm. And he'd come home and say, oh, I spent most of the day with my head on the desk. And so we started to realize there was something seriously wrong.
More than just the aging process.
Yes.
There's something wrong here.
Yes.
And how long was it between this time and when he finally was diagnosed with his terminal illness?
He became quite critically ill quickly. With fluid buildup around his heart and lungs. So he was put into hospital, and it took another 4 weeks to actually diagnose what the problem was.
Which was?
Which was amyloidosis, which is a fairly rare condition. It affects different people differently. It's a protein that damages different parts of the body, and with Peter it was his heart. And by the time he was diagnosed, it had done quite severe damage to his heart, and he was basically in heart failure.
And how did the two of you react to hearing that he has a terminal illness?
My memory of the day we were told, I was sitting on his bed, and the doctor stood there, and the doctor almost sounded relieved, because I think they were really, you know, struggling with what the problem was. Mm-hmm. And he told us what it was, and he told us there was no cure. And I think Peter and I both at that point realized that his life was limited. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we both accepted that right at that point. Neither of us really struggled at any point with the fact that he was going to die.
Really?
And no. And neither of us really pursued healing. Now, that sounds really strange, I know, but we both felt that God had given us an acceptance and an incredible peace, and it was a relief knowing what it was. It was actually more distressing in the period when we didn't know what it was. You know, that was the time when we were praying and feeling like God wasn't answering and, you know, how do we pray? What do we do? But once we knew, there was almost a sense of relief and peace.
So that's the irony of the situation, that finding out that he has a terminal illness was actually a relief in a sense.
Yes.
Because at least now you knew what you're dealing with.
Knew what we were dealing with.
But it was terminal.
And at that stage, the doctors were saying, you know, he could have a few months, he could have up to 5 years. They really, and doctors don't know. People always want to know, you know, have I got a month or 2 months? So, yes, we didn't really sort of think, oh, well, he's only got a few months. We really took on the attitude of, well, there is a future. We don't know how long it will be, but there is a future that we can enjoy. And, yeah.
Okay, we'll explore that further, just how you did spend the remaining time that you had with Peter. But first, Zoe, what can we learn from her response to that and accepting that he had a terminal illness? Is that a healthy way?
I think Margaret is showing us a beautiful way of handling what is a very painful and life-changing process that she and Peter went through. And it's not about, and we touched on this briefly before the interview, it's not suggesting at all that there wasn't deep pain in that process, but the acceptance allowed you and Peter to actually be present for each other, to be present, to be here and now, rather than being fighting the process or being in denial. And it's not saying that those other parts of the grief process that so many of us experience aren't valid and real, but because you had been doing your work, because of the process you were in and you were able to accept this is where we were at, your energy was able to go into let's just be with each other, let's just be in this time for whatever time this is. We used that word before, hunkering in, and that's what I hear from you, and that is a beautiful demonstration.
Our guest today is Margaret Pentford, who unfortunately found out that her husband Peter had a terminal illness, and she's sharing how they spent their remaining time together. Also with us is counselor Zoe Broomhead, sharing her insights. We'll find out more of Margaret and Peter's story when we return right here on Real Faith.
If this program has highlighted something you'd like prayer for, we'd love to pray for you. Call 1-800-PRAY-FOR-ME. That's 1-800-772-936. It's a free call. Or text 0401-132-888.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. And you can listen to past programs about the impact faith has had on others. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back to Real Faith. I'm Eric Scatabo, and our guest today is Margaret Pentford, who unfortunately found out that her husband of over 40 years had a terminal illness, and we're talking about how she spent their remaining time together. Also joining us on today's conversation is counselor Zoe Broomhead.
One of the things that we were very determined was to be totally honest with each other and with other people. I've always felt when I've seen other people who deny what's really happening, I've always felt that that creates a huge brick wall between people, and we didn't want that between us. And so I think that was a big part of it, that we were able to just talk totally openly, and I believe we grieved together. We used to often pray in the mornings, and we'd often cry, we'd often talk about.
So you did grieve?
Oh.
Well, because you said, I accepted it, and somebody listening could just say, well, yeah, I just accepted it. He's going to die. But that wasn't the case.
No. And Peter grieved, because Peter grieved the losses, you know, when he couldn't walk, he couldn't drive, he couldn't, there were so many things that he couldn't do. When one time we had problems with our cooler in our house, and he got very frustrated because he couldn't do anything to fix it. And we used to talk about what he was losing, and also, what I was losing. And one of my big griefs, and his too, was that we could no longer go camping together.
Because you were looking forward to your retirement years and camping trips and exploring, and that was being taken away.
Yes, you know, we didn't have any grand plans, but we'd certainly talked about the fact that he would slowly cut down the amount of time he was giving to Reach Beyond, and then we'd be able to go on more trips and, you know, get out in the bush a bit more and things like that. And one of my big griefs was actually we had a little camper van that was slide-on on his ute, and I can remember going into it one day to get something out of it and thinking, I'm never going to use this again. And that was a huge grief. You know, it was it was a conscious sense of grief. And yes, I think that I probably did a lot of my grieving while he was still alive because things we would do, and I would think there'll be a time when I won't have Peter here to do this.
So accepting that he's going to die, that your time with him is finite, it's limited, accepting it is not denying that there's going to be pain. And it sounds like, if I'm understanding correctly, Zoe, help me out with this, part of healthy processing of this is to name your griefs. Like,
yes.
I am disappointed. I'm sad that we will not have those camping trips and we will not be able to do X, Y, and Z.
Yes, absolutely. Grief is about loss and change. And the more you can acknowledge this is the loss, this is the change, this is what's happening, then you can actually sit with that and work through that. And we call it anticipatory grief, all of those griefs that you begin to work with before the person has died. And you were doing that very intentionally. And I think that's what I'm hearing in your story. So much of this process for you and Peter was very intentional. You were sitting together, you were talking about it, there was open communication with intentional processes taking place.
So like you said, you were very open with each other that, yes, there is limited time that we're going to have together. What did you do intentionally to make the most of that time?
We did lots of things. Because trips and holidays and camping had always been very important to us, we decided that because we couldn't take holidays anymore, we would go on holidays half a day at a time, and we would go out in the bush for a walk.
Half day holiday.
And
so he's in a wheelchair at this point?
Or to the beach. Yes, he was in a wheelchair when he went out. He could walk a little bit, but we, for example, we went to Frankston and walked along the boardwalk, and there he discovered that boardwalks and railings are not built for people in wheelchairs because the board is at eye level.
All he's seeing is a board.
And same thing happened when we went to Studley Park to walk over the swing bridge. Same thing.
You were having a good time, though.
Yeah, I was having a great time. We went and we'd take a picnic lunch and go and sit somewhere and have a picnic lunch. We went on some walks in parks and we had some funny experiences. One time we decided to go on a particular path and there happened to be a tree that had fallen down over the path. And because he could walk a little bit, he had to get out of his wheelchair and climb over the tree.
While he was determined to do it, though.
Lugged the wheelchair over the tree. And then another time we went to another park where we went down a fairly steep hill, and then we realised that the other side was even steeper and I would never get him up the hill. So then we turned around to go back, but I couldn't actually push him up the hill. So he had to get out and walk
up the hill,
which was quite difficult for him. But we just laughed about it. And another time we were in another park where the path had lots of stones and tree roots, and, you know, here he is jiggling along in his wheelchair. But he was just able to still enjoy, you know, a little bit of and offset the losses and offset the limitations. So,
and of course, everybody's experience is going to be a little bit different. So in Peter's case, he was able to do some things even though he had the terminal illness.
Yes, yes.
And so you're saying this is what you did. You're not necessarily saying this is the right fit for everybody in your situation.
Oh, no, because it depends on, you know, who you are, the kind of person. He also was very determined to get to church. And so we would go late so that he didn't have to talk to people beforehand and get too tired. And then he would, you know, talk to a few people afterwards. And then when I could see that it was starting to distress him, then we'd nick off home again.
You became a finely tuned team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just worked out
out what would work and, you know, for us and what wouldn't. Yeah.
That sounds like that was very helpful, that you were just completely honest with each other. Is that right?
I think so. I think that was a big part of it.
And accepting that, yes, unless the Lord decides to miraquously heal him, which you were,
we were quite
open for that possibility.
Yes, yep.
But if it doesn't happen, you were at peace with that as well.
And he found, we both found that, you know, things that people wrote to us were often helpful. He, right at the very beginning, we had a verse on a calendar, Psalm 46:1, I think it is. God is my refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. And that became his key verse. And when he was in hospital, I had it written up on the wall. And he really believed that God took him into a place of refuge. So that was very important to him. And we chose to look for the positives and look for the things that we could be grateful for. And
because it would be so easy to not look at the positive.
Yeah. Oh, very.
Woe is me.
Very. Little things, like we had built our house about 6 years previously, and we sort of half jokingly at the time said we're building this for our old age, so it has no steps, it has no shower recess, it just has a wet room.
So you built it not knowing what was going to happen, but it was
perfect. For someone in a wheelchair. So all sorts of things like that. Yes, yeah, we could just see how God, even the fact that amyloidosis is a very rare disease and there's only 3 specialists in Australia, but one was half an hour away from our home in Box Hill.
Wow.
So many things like that, that we could just see God's goodness, mm-hmm. we could see his love for us, we could even see God's power. And one of the things that I felt a lot of Christians around me were saying, you know, God should heal him. And it was almost as if God didn't heal him, he wasn't powerful. But we were seeing his power just in our everyday experiences and our everyday life.
You were seeking it out.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
Mm. Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about the attitude of gratitude that Margaret and Peter had.
Yeah.
How helpful is that in a situation
look,
like this?
I think it's absolutely incredibly powerful. I heard a phrase recently, think about what you think about. And if we're only seeking out what is negative and what is bad, then that's what our mind is going to focus on. But if we have that attitude of gratitude and intentionally look for those things that we can be grateful for, and I can cite clients going through chemo, one client who, and I have consent to tell this because I have an album of theirs, who would take a photograph every single day and put it in an album and say, and this is the thing I'm grateful for today. And what a beautiful focus to have, to give an intentional focus of gratitude through what is a very difficult and painful time. And that's what, I'm not saying you were taking photographs, but I'm saying you found your own way of being very intentional to be thankful for the things that you could be appreciative
actually,
of.
Actually, Zoe, I didn't take many photographs, but I made a list on my computer of things I could thank the Lord for, and I got up to about 500.
Wow.
Oh, isn't that fabulous?
Wow, that's fantastic.
Just little things like, you know, like Peter, like my children, like flowers, like the sunshine, like,
And it is finding those things. And clients will tell me, I went back to my photo album or my list or my whatever and just went through it, and it's just a reminder for me of the things that are keeping me going and holding me in there.
Well, unfortunately, our conversation has gone by very quickly, so kind of in conclusion, wrapping this up, Margaret, well, we know that about a year ago, Peter did die of the terminal illness. Mm. Any concluding thoughts of what you've learned through all this?
Oh, I've learnt so much and I've gained so much. I miss him dreadfully, but since Peter died, I've been amazed at how at peace I've been, how I'm so aware of God being with me.
Zoe, any concluding comments?
I think we've just been hearing this lovely, painful but lovely story of how Margaret and Peter hunkered in. They pulled together and drew close to God. And whether it's a terminal illness or some other form of life crisis, that is how people get through well. And I think this is just a lovely demonstration of how we can face very painful situations and come through and still be growing in our spirituality, in our faith, in ourself, and come through in a healthy way, but not diminishing the pain of the experience.
Margaret Penford, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you, Eric.
Zoe, thanks for sharing your insights.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.